One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You're listening to the KGRA Digital Broadcasting Station, Salt Lake City, Utah, Van Buren, Arkansas.
This episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Dollar Shave Club. Try your first month of their best razor, along with travel size versions of shave butter, body cleanser, and butt wipes for just $5. Just go to dollarshaveclub.com/expanded.
What's going on out there, y'all? Thanks again for piling in here with us here on Expanded Perspectives. Of course, it's me, Cam, and of course, sitting across the table from me is Mr. Bigelow himself, Kyle Bigelow Filson.
How's it going, everybody? What was that you just hit my face with? I wasn't sure if that was a spider or what that was.
Like a spider ring.
You threw like, what was that, like a twist tie or something?
That was a twist tie that I got off of a cat of nine tails cable that we got in here.
A cat of nine tails. Isn't that a torture whip or something?
I think that's what it is. Isn't that the one that had like the wire on the ends of the leather and it would like, you'd whip them with it?
I don't remember. I remember, though, I took like a history course in high school. I don't remember. It was a long time ago.
We all took a history
course. Yeah, I know. This was
we
like,
all got to go to work tomorrow,
this was like this was like European history, like an AP history European course.
And I remember they had a
book of all these medieval weapons. And I remember like lecture after lecture, the teacher would be talking. I'd just be looking at those weapons. And I don't remember the names of a lot of them, but I think the Cat of Nine Tails was one of those medieval weapons.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's interesting when you watch the show Forged in Fire. You ever watched that on the History Channel? And you always have these competitors, and they try to make a knife, and this time you got to make it with a serrated blade, and this time you got to make it out of Damascus or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, they always have them a challenge where they have to make a historical blade, and you'll see some of those crazy blades on there. And that's one of my favorite parts is because of the different cultures, you get to see their approach to fighting weapons. And I don't know why, but some of the cultures, they have some really cool weapons, and you'll see like some from Africa or some from the Japan or China, some of the Middle East. And or even the Maori, you know, they had those crazy like clubs with like shark teeth on them.
Yes, that was awesome.
I know that, of course, they don't make that because it's forged in fire. It's made with metalworking. But anyways, any of those medieval weapons, whether it's atlatls, dirks, pikes, whatever you want to. And even the, what is that, like naginatas, where it's like a big spear with a big plate on the end. I mean, it's just,
yeah,
I love
that
stuff. And, you know, we talk about it from time to time when you're watching the ancient kung fu movies, the martial arts, the Shaolin movies. And you see like the three-section staff, and you see like the, I don't know what the sword is. It's got like a half moon in the handle, and then it goes up, and it goes like a crazy hook, and they interlock them together, and they
swing.
You know what I'm talking about?
What about the sword that had like the rings in the top of it? And they had like the big ribbon on the back, and I think you tied the ribbon around your hand in some way, and all.
Yeah.
That may have just been in the movies. I don't know if those are real, but I love them.
Oh, no. I want to believe that that's 100% real.
And
100% real.
I wish I knew how they used to fly through the air back in the day, because I know they used to do it. They had to fly through the air, run this like hidden dragon, crouching tiger stuff.
I've always wanted to learn how to run, do like a flip-flop, you know, handspring, and then just in time kick my bow staff with my foot and then complete like three or four more somersaults and it land perfectly in my hand and me just go right back into a fight.
Like parkour?
I mean, I can only imagine how fighting was so much cooler back then.
Yeah, it's kind of boring now.
Watch the UFC? Yeah, so what? Superman punch, wheel kick, big deal.
Fly through. I want to see a guy run and jump and lay on the side of the cage and run in a full circle like those motorcycle riders all the way around it while just going, and just punching a guy in the face.
I want to see the guys that get on their head like break dancers and then run around with their heads. You ever seen them fight like that? Or they just, they scooch?
Or they jump and they put their knees, they land on top of your shoulders, they start punching the top of the head?
Yeah, and I've seen several bar fights when I've been up in Northside
we go.
And I have never seen one guy pull out drunken style. I mean, they're all drunk, but they never try the... You know, and they pretend like they throw a shot back and nobody can hit them.
I've never seen anybody thrown over the bar into a big mirror. I've never witnessed any of that. I mean, I've seen a bunch of drunks punch each other, but nothing crazy like that.
Another fascinating thing I've never seen in all those fights I've seen, you know, live in the street, I've never seen the guys be courteous and take their time attacking the one guy. Like, they each wait their turn.
Yeah, I've never witnessed that. In fact, the truth of the matter is, we were both in a very large scuffle at one party, one back in high school, and I remember getting involved. And I don't remember anybody taking their time not laying the boot to me at that point, because I remember going down and I was like, it's not single file. They are kicking the crap out of me down here.
You probably deserved it.
I deserved every minute of it. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Well, there's a lot of exciting news in the world of UFOs, mm-hmm. so we need to get into it. Now, everyone's probably who listens to this show is a fan of UFOs, or at least knows about UFOs. And if they are. They know about Project Blue Book. Now, if you don't know, back in 1947, the Air Force began a series of studies that investigated more than 12,000 claims of UFO sightings before it was officially ended back in 1969, or at least that's what they claimed. Now, these studies that they concluded, concluded that there was not a threat and that UFOs were not real, and that most of the sightings involved were either stars or clouds or swamp gas or conventional aircraft or even spy planes. And out of those 12,000 sightings that they studied, 701 remained unexplained. We were led to believe by the U.S. government that they no longer had an interest in UFOs and were no longer looking to any of these sightings. Well, Cam, that may not have been true. Now, according to several sources, including the New York Times, the government has not stopped looking into the phenomenon. In fact, they spent a whopping $22 million on what they've called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program. Now, for years, this program investigated reports of unidentified flying objects, according to Defense Department officials, interviews, and program participants, and records that have been obtained by the New York Times. They said it was run by a military intelligence official known as Luis Elizondo on the fifth floor of the Pentagon's C-Ring, deep within the building's maze. Now, the Defense Department has never before, it says, acknowledged the existence of the program, which it says now that it shut down officially in 2012. But its backers say that while the Pentagon ended funding for the effort at the time, the program remains still in existence. They say for the last 5 years, officials with the program have continued to investigate episodes brought to them by service members while also carrying out other Defense Department duties. It says the shadowy program, parts of it have remained classified, so not all of it has been declassified, began back in 2007, and it initially was largely funded at the request of Harry Reid, who's the Nevada Democrat, who was on the Senate Majority Leader for a time, and who has long had an interest in space phenomena. He said that most of the money went to an aerospace research company run by billionaire entrepreneur and longtime friend of the show, Robert Bigelow, who is currently working with NASA to produce expandable craft for humans' use in outer space. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Bigelow has come out on the record numerous times and says he's absolutely convinced that aliens exist and that UFOs have visited the Earth before. Now, the article points out that working with Mr. Bigelow's Las Vegas-based company, the program produced documents that described sightings of aircraft that seemed to move at very high velocities with no visible signs of propulsion or that hovered with no apparent means of lift. Now, officials with the program have also studied videos of encounters between unknown objects and American military aircraft, including one released back in August of a whitish oval object about the size of a commercial plane. Now, this was chased by two Navy F-18 fighter jets from the aircraft carrier the Nimitz off the coast of San Diego back in 2004. And I must say, I watched this video. Mm-hmm. It's quite compelling. I urge everyone listening to this to click on the show links on your smartphone or whatever, or on your computer, and follow the link. I'll put it in the show notes and go over there and watch that video. It's a black and white video, but it's from the plane's heads up display. Mm-hmm. You know, like the targeting system. You look where Tom Cruise, the Maverick, is trying to lock onto the enemy behind him. You know, and it's got the sight and stuff. It's that thing. It's up on their dashboard of the craft, you know. It's a video of this very strange object. You can hear the fighter pilots talking to each other. Apparently, it's two, because you never leave your wingman.
Yeah.
You can hear him talking and saying, look, man, I think that's a drone. And the other guy's like, wait, that don't look like a drone. There's a bunch of them. And then you can see in the film where the thing is changing shape and moving. The guy's like, dude, it's flying pretty quick into like 120 knot winds. I don't know. It's unusual. And what's also strange is that, you know, recently Joe Rogan had Tom DeLonge on.
Yeah.
And they were talking about these projects that he's been working with these guys. And he brought up a couple of videos about, I don't remember the name of the TR-1B or whatever the name of the aircraft was. But, you know, it makes you start to wonder. Obviously, Project Blue Book was not the end of the military watching.
Yeah.
They were officially claiming that, but obviously they've been keeping an eye on it. And they know now, because several senators and people have come forward and said, yeah, they started a program up in 2007. And it's still going on today, which makes sense. You're never going to stop monitoring the skies, because if another country was developing some kind of secret technology, you'd want to be aware of it. You wouldn't be like, oh, crap, we didn't think Russia was doing anything. It turns out they did. Right. So you got to, you know, you never take your eyes off the skies. And so it totally makes sense to me that they've been keeping track of this stuff.
Yeah, you got to be proactive in this.
Yeah.
You can't be reactive in any of this stuff.
Yeah, the article goes on to talk about how officials within the program have also studied numerous videos of encounters between unknown objects and American military aircraft. It talks about how Mr. Reed himself, who retired from Congress this year, said that he was proud of the program, and I'm not embarrassed or ashamed or sorry I got this thing going. He said in a recent interview that I think it's one of the good things I did in my congressional service. I've done something that no one else has done before. So I don't know what to think about it, but it's pretty interesting. The videos are definitely interesting, and I like the fact that they're coming out and saying, look, we are still researching unidentified flying objects.
Well, and what I like about this whole thing, too, is this. They don't come out and start claiming that it's extraterrestrial. There's nowhere in they start claiming this.
No, Mr. Bigelow has said
that. He did, yes. But nowhere in any of these other things do they claim. And, in fact, they actually have a quote in here from James Oberg, which is a former NASA shuttle engineer.
Yeah.
And he's written a bunch of stuff, and he's a debunker, right? I mean,
right.
He debunks UFO sightings and all that stuff. And there's even some stuff that he talks about that, and there's a quote in here, and I'm going to read it to you. It says, he said this, lots of people are active in the air and don't want others to know about it. He goes on to say that they are happy to lurk unrecognized in the noise and even to stir it up as camouflage. So right then, that right there made me start thinking about a breakaway society. Remember we talk about these people doing all this stuff on their own. We've talked about kids inventing stuff that they, like nuclear reactors that they have in their garages and all this stuff. If we have that ability now, and that's the stuff that they can do, with that kind of craziness, how come you couldn't invent your own some kind of crazy flying device? And I know there's a lot of what ifs, right? I mean, we're just speculating, so just speculate along with me, folks. What if out in the country somewhere, there was one of these, you know, engineers or whatever, crazy old farmer guy, old, you know, hillbilly country guy that just knew how to do all this. And he just went to piecing it all together, you know, and ended up building something wacky like this. Who knows? I mean, the possibility is out there that something like that could be built, and it could be something that's terrestrial, like we talk about. I mean, those aren't any more crazy an idea as an extraterrestrial visiting the planet.
Well, you know, what if it's staring us right in the face, like it literally is hidden in plain sight? I mean, don't forget about Bob Lazar. I mean, the guy, he's not been hushed up. He's not dead. He's still working.
Mm-hmm.
He has his own business. I forgot what kind of engineering business he's doing, lasers or something. But remember, he was the whistleblower that came forward and says, I was working on reverse engineering alien technology.
Yeah.
And he's continued to work. Now, why would a guy who's just an engineer make up some stuff out of the blue and then continue? You think it would discredit, it would ruin his business, but obviously it hasn't.
Yeah.
Now, I know there's been things that have come up that said, well, his background wasn't really provable. He made some claims that he went to MIT or some other, or Berkeley. I don't remember where. Yeah. But don't you think that immediately after he made these claims that the government or whoever wasn't purposely putting out disinformation to try to discredit the guy?
I mean, I would. Wouldn't you?
That would be the first move. You're like, we got to get a team and we got to start pumping out information.
Somebody
disinformation
try to erase
about
stuff.
This guy.
Yeah.
But he's never really brought it up before. He doesn't do any interviews over it anymore. He doesn't write books about it. So, like, it is odd that an engineer would just come forward and say a bunch of that stuff. The government come back, try to discredit the guy, and the guy just goes on living and working the rest of his life.
Like, that's, it's nothing.
Doesn't want nothing to do with it. Because how many people do you meet at these? I'm getting all excited. I'm talking super fast. How many times have you been to these conferences that we've been to where you see people that had one small incident happen to them, or they had one experience, and they literally live the rest of their life going from conference to conference, talking about that one experience, or writing book after book after book after that one experience, like, you know, not to pick on people, but milking it.
Yes.
Bob Lazar doesn't ever mention it anymore. Doesn't appear on TV. Doesn't write. Like I said, he could make money from what he could possibly tell. Or he came forward with that information. The government put out the disinformation. And then somebody contacted him and said, you better pump the brakes. If you ever write a book, do an interview, come out about this again, it'll be your last.
Or what if they went back and got him and said, how about we pay you and you just go back to work with us?
It may be.
You know, it's one of those deals. Or maybe he just quit talking about it because he knew they could find out that he was totally full of crap now. And they were like, well,
yeah, maybe.
You know, that's the whole thing. There's so many questions. That's the deal is, man, it's never ending. That's the part that will make you go crazy, will make you mad trying to think of this stuff.
It makes you think that there really is this secret group, like the cigarette smoking man. You know what I'm talking about from the X-Files, and that kind of stuff is closer to the truth than you know.
It does. It always makes me wonder about a small branch. Like, I don't know why I picture a branch of like 8 guys.
Well, the Majestic 12, isn't that what that group is supposed to be? I think the group that is depicted in the X-Files is supposed to be like a recreation of the mythic Majestic 12.
It does feel that way. Yeah. I mean, it does. I don't know. I guess it would be one of those things. I don't know how, as far as like how you would shift money around, you know, to how would you have all this money going? Like $22 million is quite a bit of money. I don't know how it would be used for, like, you know, looking the skies, doing, I mean, I don't know how far that money would go into that kind of research. Maybe it doesn't go more than a couple of weeks a year. But I'm not even sure that 22 million number's correct.
I'm pretty sure it's not. Isn't there like something like 600 trillion that's missing every year?
It does, make you wonder, right? Like the numbers we're getting, like if we can't believe,
I don't think it's trillion. I think it's 600 billion that's unaccounted for every year. And you're like, what do you mean it's unaccounted for? Well, it's in black projects.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. Is if you're just now, they're just now willing to come forward and talk about this from 2007.
Yeah.
You want me to believe that the numbers you're giving me is right?
Yeah.
Like, come on, man.
I think the numbers are kind of like Libsyn's numbers.
Well, I've got you something here, folks. It's not quite UFO stylings, but then again, it is. It is a reptilian commando encounter.
I'm in. I have a high praise for any reptilian, but reptilian commandos, those are a special breed.
They are serving their country well. Folks, this comes from Phantoms and Monsters. Lon had posted this, and he's talking about an account he received, said a few years ago. Now, this was in 2009 or so. The fellow writes that at a family gathering, my brother casually mentioned to my sister and I that his wife had seen a UFO and that it scared the crap out of her. And when my sister and I approached her, she wouldn't talk about it. So we decided on New Year's Eve to get her nice and buzzed up and then try to get the story out of her again. Well, she was more than buzzed when we brought it up, and you could see her face change, becoming upset. But we kept at it, trying to coax it out of her until she finally told us this story. My brother and her live in a very rural part of Naples, Florida, near where my mom's house is. She woke up one morning from a nightmare, coincidentally about UFOs, which is why I suspect this whole thing might have been some sort of waking dream, and went out onto her porch for a cigarette. There's that cigarette thing again, Kyle.
Yep.
Outside, parked on the street, in front of her house, was a... Okay, you ready? A glowing saucer-shaped ship parked in front of her house, coming out of it, dressed in what she described as combat armor and holding weapons, and all were a group of 7-foot-tall reptilian humanoids. She said that they were very massively built and evil-looking. She started backing away in terror when one of them turned to her. Then, in her head, now she said it didn't move its mouth, she heard, "Go back inside, we're not here for you."
That's all you had to say.
That's right.
You're calling in the wolf? Yeah, I'd be out of there.
Then the figures crossed the street to the house across from hers.
She turned and scampered back into her place and hid, not daring to look outside for a good while. Now, apparently...
Yeah, I'd be like, I don't know what Miss Lambert did across the street, right? But she's in trouble.
Oh, the minute I first read this, I was thinking about Eastbound and Down. When he goes, if you want to pick on a kid, pick on that one, because I ain't looking. That's the whole deal. It's like, I don't know what's going on over there, bro. I didn't see a thing. Whatever she did to y'all, that's y'all's business.
And that's the kind of crime where you don't even want to call the police, because yeah. You're like, then they'll know that I'm the one that reported it.
Yeah,
I'm
just, like, nope,
nothing to see here. Nope.
We're all good here, bro. All good. Now, apparently her daughter was also involved in this sighting. And he says, but this is as much of the story as my sister and I could get out of her. Now, I know this sounds ridiculous, but if you heard her telling it and saw how sobered up very quickly she became, that it might creep you out as much as it did us at the time. And at one point, she broke into tears and hysteria, so we asked her to stop and never approach the subject with her again, he goes on to say, but that we've never even asked the daughter about it, but my brother says he slept through the whole thing. But how crazy is that you see seven humanoids walking out there
yoked
with humanoids
with
weapons. Yeah,
commando vest, the big square tube laws rocket that holds four.
Yeah, the big box.
Yeah.
And those naginatas and bow staff, three sectional staffs,
and grenades. And
yes,
yeah, no, that I'm picturing, for whatever reason, that the reptilians not only were yoked with combat vests on, but that they had green berets on.
What's the neighbor done that's so bad?
Who knows?
That's going down.
I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds awful. If that showed up in your... I can't even imagine that.
The worst
I
want
to believe
possible.
It's a waking dream. I want to believe that she dreamed the whole thing and it just seems so real to her. First of all, I want to know what happened to the neighbor. That's what I want to know. Like, where'd the neighbor go? Just vanished?
Yeah, like, I mean,
you're coming
obviously
with us.
You would be looking, and if you didn't see the neighbor ever again, you'd be like, well, I know something happened. But then if you did see the neighbor a couple days later, wouldn't you have to go over there and go,
did you have some visitors last night?
I saw something a little strange the other day.
I come in peace.
Oh, yeah. What was the name of that movie?
What was that? With Blarcy. We always talk about this, where he'd shoot you full of cocaine and stab a suctional stake in your skull and suck out the stuff out of your head.
Yeah.
What was that? It had Dolph Lundgren in it. Maybe it was called I Come in Peace.
I think it was called that.
I Come in Peace. That big, giant, blonde alien running around there. You go in pieces.
Yeah. If you're young or a millennial and you're listening to the show, you need to check out that movie, I Come in Peace. It's a... pretty jam up, especially Blarcy.
Yeah,
that's an incredible drug. But speaking of things that's incredible, after the break, I'm going to be talking about one of my favorite sightings of all time, a strange being simply known as the Grinning Man. Stay with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. A couple days ago, I was speaking to a longtime friend of mine, and we were just chatting about stuff, and somehow along the line, he brought up some unusual sightings, and we were talking back and forth about them, and he brought up the Grinning Man. Now, this is a figure from lore that I've kind of forgotten about over the years. I know we did an episode back in October of 2014, I believe, about the Grinning Man, and then we even interviewed David Weatherly, who's an author and researcher, and he's actually the only person I've ever spoken to who's actually seen this Grinning Man. And so on today's show, I'm going to get back into the Grinning Man. I know we've mentioned it before, like I said, but I found some new stories that I've never talked about previously. And so when I was thinking about David and his encounter, I had to go back through the literature and find one of his books. Now, he's an excellent writer, and he wrote this book called Strange Intruders, and I believe the artwork is done by Sam Sheeran. But it's an excellent book, and in that book, he gives a detailed account of his actual experience. I'm going to read you now exactly what David has said. He says in his book, "I've seen the grinning man." It almost sounds like a silly statement, bringing to mind the image of a man with a large grin, perhaps a bit goofy, and certainly not malevolent. But sometimes it's the most subtle things that are the creepiest. You see, the version of the grinning man that I saw was not some fellow with a simple, silly smile on his face. Oh no. This was a very strange character indeed, certainly out of place, and somehow quite disturbing. Now, my encounter occurred in the 1980s in a rural part of North Carolina. I was in the passenger seat of a car being driven by a friend named Tom. I'd known Tom for a number of years, and we frequently took trips and explored the back roads around the area. Tom often stated that he believed I was a magnet for weird events, and that he took a chance hanging out with me so much. His assertions were proven late one afternoon as we drove along a winding road lined with trees on both sides. There was only an occasional farm along this route, and it was a very pleasant drive. We cruised along at a fairly moderate pace, maybe 45 miles an hour, not really in any hurry. As we rounded one curve, the road headed into a long curve in the opposite direction. Looking ahead, I saw someone standing on the right side of the road, just ahead. I focused on this figure, thinking something looked a bit odd. As we got closer, I realized that the man was wearing a long coat and a hat. It was late summer, and even the evenings were warm at that time of the year. Why was this man wearing a coat? Couldn't figure it out. I motioned to Tom and asked him if he saw the man. He shook his head in reply, transfixed on the figure. The car seemed to actually slow down as we approached the stranger. I wasn't sure if Tom was actually letting off the gas or if something else was happening. Later, he would have no clear memory as to whether or not he was actually lifting his foot from the gas pedal or if something else caused the slow motion effect. As the car approached the figure, he came clearly into focus. He was wearing a long, old-fashioned coat and a formal-looking hat. The hat was cut like a top hat, but it didn't seem as tall. His right hand was gloved, and he held it up, just under his chin. It looked as if he was rubbing his thumb and fingers together. His left arm hung down behind his back. The entire ensemble looked rather Victorian, except visible under the coat was a large, shiny belt. The oddest thing, however, was his expression. He was grinning. A wide, leering grin, impossibly large. It distorted his face and reminded me in that moment of the Joker, the Batman's crazed villain who was always depicted with a grinning face. Everything seemed to move in slow motion as we drifted past the strange, tall man. His gaze followed us as we rolled by him. We almost came to a complete stop. I felt a chill, as if we had just crossed over the path of something wholly unnatural. I turned around, peering through the back window to get another look at the figure. He was still there, standing in the road now, looking towards our car, but quick as I had turned around, I hadn't seen him move to his new position. It seemed impossible, and added to the creepiness of the whole affair. Well, I turned to Tom, who was looking in the rearview mirror, white as a sheet and eyes wide in disbelief. Turning back, I saw the grinning figure still standing in the road, staring at us with his hideous smile. I watched for a moment, then we rounded another curve, and I lost sight of him. The car seemed to speed up quickly, and I thought that Tom had slammed the gas pedal back down. I immediately asked him to stop and go back. He, of course, expressed the opinion that I was crazy, and that there was no way he was stopping, let alone going back to the spot where the crazy guy was standing. "He's probably just some psycho who watched Friday the 13th too many times," Tom said. I didn't think that was the case. We were in an area with very few houses, and we hadn't seen any other vehicles parked along the road. Not that there was any place to really pull over anyways. Tom, there was something unnatural about that character. I want to get another look at him. You're damn right he was unnatural. He's some psycho, Tom replied. The debate raged for a couple of miles before I could convince Tom to turn around and at least go back to the bend in the road. We'll just go around to the bend and see if he's still standing there in the road and if he's waiting for another car to come. Tom reluctantly agreed to the plan, and we made a U-turn in the road, heading back to the location where we'd last seen the grinning man. Rounding the bend slowly, we scanned the road ahead, and there was nothing there. Tom completely stopped the car in the middle of the road, and we both just sat there within sight of the spot where we had just seen this figure. I jumped out of the car to Tom's loud protests and ran to the spot where the figure had stood. I was more curious than concerned, and I was confident that Tom would not leave me stranded, despite his aggravation over my actions. I searched the area where the grinning figure had stood. There was no sign of a vehicle anywhere. Nowhere that someone could have pulled off and parked. No hidden driveways. There was, in fact, very little room on the side of the road at this location. There was a deep ditch very close to the road, and the tree line started directly on the other side of the ditch. There was room for someone to stand here and there, and I found the spot where we had seen this figure. There weren't any visible footprints, but the heavy grass did look as though someone had recently stood on it. The one odd thing in the area was a strange smell. It was electrical in nature, as though a transformer or something like it had been burning. There were no power lines here, however, and I couldn't find anything to explain the unusual odor. Tom had pulled the car up, yelling out the window, insisting that we leave, and he would leave me here if I didn't get back in the car. I complied after a moment, glancing one more time up and down in each direction in one last search for the odd grinning man, but there was nothing. As soon as I climbed in the car, Tom made another quick U-turn, and we sped off. In my friend's mind, the entire incident simply reaffirmed his belief that strange things happen whenever he spent too much time around me. I, on the other hand, was left wondering about what exactly we had seen. Clearly, someone had stood in the grass where we had seen the grinning figure, yet there was no route that the man could have taken to get away from the area quickly. I vowed to return to the area myself and investigate further. I also resolved to myself that I would have to start hanging out with people who were just as curious about the unknown as I was. Later that night, a couple of odd events added to the mystery of the day. Just before 9 o'clock, flashes of lightning began to fill the sky. Clearly, a storm was moving in. About an hour later, Tom called me to tell me that the house next door to his got struck by lightning and had actually caught on fire. Tom was actually outside getting his dog in and out of the weather when it happened. Sparks shot up everywhere, he said. The roof of the house started burning. Fortunately, no one was injured, and the fire department was able to get the flames out before extensive damage was done. It was an unusual event, and I was immediately reminded of the electrical, burning smell that had been in the area around this grinning man. Was he an omen of an event that occurred later that night? Some may consider such things mere coincidence, but synchronicities like these often fall into place in the aftermath of encounters with paranormal figures. The night got more interesting when, a half hour after Tom's call, another friend rang me to report that his sister and mother had just sighted a UFO. The family lived about 5 miles from Tom, and I learned the sighting had taken place about the same time that Tom witnessed the lightning strike on his neighbor's home. Now, at this point, the rain was fairly heavy, but despite the nasty weather, I drove to the location on the off chance that something else might happen. Sadly, there were no other anomalous incidents in the area that night. Asking around the next day, I discovered that another couple had witnessed strange lights in the sky the previous night. All four people who sighted the UFO reported the same thing, a bright light, low in the sky, that shimmered and pulsated. Initially, the light was white and changed color to amber, then to blue-white, and then back to white. On a number of occasions, I returned to the location where Tom and I had seen the grinning man. My propensity to investigate strange sightings and events was fueled by my desire to decipher what had actually happened. The closest house to the spot of the sighting was several miles away. Carefully, I asked around in the area, trying to root out other sightings or strange events. It's not an easy task in the country. Obviously, I couldn't try knocking at the door of a random farmhouse to ask if they'd seen any strange characters about. The riddle remained. Who was the grinning man? Why did he appear? And where did he go? There's never been an answer that completely satisfied the mystery for me. There was a scant information available on the grinning man at the time. I read John Keel's accounts, as well as a few others related to things I could find. Opinions as to the figure's origin were divided. Many thought that he was some type of alien. Some believed he was a cryptid, or perhaps a ghost. The most amusing input I received came from a contactee who assured me that the grinning man was simply a friendly space brother. What an incredible sighting. I mean, David is the only person I've ever spoken to that's actually seen the grinning man. Now, if this is your first time hearing about the grinning man, it's very creepy. He's always seen as like beady eyes staring there with just an incredible grin on his face, just staring there. He's often seen just standing there communicating with people through mental telepathy. Now, the first sighting of the grinning man occurred back on October 11th in 1966 when these two boys saw a strange white light the size of a car, and this was reported by several people. The craft was first seen outside of Pompton, New Jersey, near a large DuPont explosive factory. A police officer and his wife observed the craft as it moved north over the hills. Once it was over the hills, the craft was spotted again, this time by two law enforcement officers on patrol, a Sergeant Benjamin Thompson and a patrolman Edward Wester of the Wanake Reservoir Police. The two officers watched the UFO drop over the reservoir. Thompson claimed that the light emanated from it was so bright that he was blinded for nearly 20 minutes after seeing it. Well, at the same time, 40 miles to the south, another strange encounter was unfolding. In the town of Elizabeth, New Jersey, two boys were walking home along 4th and New Jersey streets. The boys' names, James Yankaitis and Martin Mouse Munov, reached a corner parallel to the New Jersey Turnpike. Now, at this location, the turnpike is elevated with a steep drop down to 4th Street. A high wire fence serves as a barricade between the street and the turnpike. Now, at this bright location, the two boys witnessed a very odd character just standing behind the fence. Now, Yankaitis, who saw the figure first, later commented, "I don't know how he got there. He was the biggest man I'd ever seen." Now, Yankaitis caught the attention of his friend, Mouse, and pointed to the tall man. Now, according to Mouse Munov, "I looked around and there he was, behind that fence, just standing there. He pivoted around and looked right at us, and then he grinned a big old grin, the biggest I've ever seen." Now, John Keel, the researcher and author, went to Elizabeth, New Jersey to interview these boys. And UFO researcher James Mosley and actor Chuck McCann, who a UFO enthusiast, went with him. Now, the boys were interviewed separately, and they both told the same story. They claimed that the man that they had seen was easily over 6 feet tall. He was wearing a green coveralls that sparkled and shimmered, reflecting the streetlights. At his waist was a wide black belt. Now, McCann, who was present for the interviews, was used as a reference point since he was 6 foot two. Now, both boys asserted that the grinning man was not only taller than McCann, but also much broader. The grinning man, they said, had a dark complexion and beady little round eyes. Oddly, neither of the boys could remember any other features on the man's face, nor could they remember any hair. The boys didn't notice the man's hands, and his feet were obscured by the underbrush. The boys did not linger in the area after seeing the man. There had been some violent attacks in the neighborhood, so they weren't taking any chances. Now, John Keel heard rumors that a tall green man had chased a couple down 4th Street that night, but he was unable to substantiate the tale. John Keel considered various possibilities to explain the presence of the strange man, but nothing seemed to add up. On the surface, it was merely a tall man with a large grin. But why was he standing behind the fence near the turnpike? and Kaitis and Munoz believed that the man was staring at the house across the street. Was it a mere coincidence that the man had turned up at the same time that a UFO flap occurred? No one seems to know. Now, if you're not familiar with John Keel, because I know a lot of young people listen to the show, he's probably one of the best-known paranormal authors of all time, probably the most Fortean thinker other than Charles Fort himself, and one of my all-time favorites. He's most famous for writing the Mothman Chronicles. He was the one that wrote about the Mothman, Indrid Cold, and the strange happenings around Point Pleasant, West Virginia back in 1966. But he's also written about so much more. Books like Operation Trojan Horse, The Eighth Tower, Strange Creatures, Visitors from Space, Strange Mutants, and many more. Now, he was the first person to really write about this strange being, only known as Indrid Cold. On November 2nd, 1966, on Interstate 77 between Marietta, Ohio, and Minor Wells, West Virginia, a sewing machine salesman named Woodrow Derenberger had a strange encounter. Now, Derenberger was driving through the rain on his way home to Minor Wells when a strange object came up from behind him. At first, he thought it was simply a car speeding up to pass his slower-moving truck. When the object was in front of him, however, it turned sideways on the highway and began to slow down, forcing Derenberger to stop and pull off the road to avoid hitting it. Now, according to reports, Derenberger said the object was shaped like the chimney of a kerosene lamp. A six-foot man with a dark complexion and elongated eyes emerged from the weird object and approached Derenberger. The man wore a dark coat and shiny blue pants. He approached Derenberger's truck and offered a huge grin. The stranger proceeded to have a conversation with Derenberger telepathically. The conversation consisted of fairly simple questions during the course of it, and the man told Derenberger that his name was Cold and that he was from a country less powerful than the United States. The grinning man told Derenberger that he would return and climbed into his strange craft. The ship then departed, moving straight up with only a slight noise. Well, Derenberger was actually interviewed about his encounter with Indrid Cold. In fact, I know that sometime in the past we've played the interview on this show. But anyways, he said in that interview, now these are his own words, "I am a salesman and I drive a truck, and last night, shortly after 7 p.m., I was coming from Marietta, Ohio, coming down Interstate 77.
And just before I came to the intersection of Route 47, there was a car past me, overtaking me from behind, and following closely behind this car was this unidentified flying object. And as the car ahead, or the car behind, passed me, this object was following close behind it, and it swerved directly in front of my truck, turning crosswise. And when it turned crosswise, it slowed down. It started slowing, not abruptly or too fast, but it gave me plenty of time to step on my brakes and slow down with it. But it forced me to come to a complete stop. As soon as I had stopped, there was a door opened in the side of this vehicle, and this man stepped out and came directly to me, or came to the truck. He walked to the right-hand side of the truck, and he told me to roll down the window. He asked me to roll down the window on my right-hand side of my truck, and I had done what he asked. And this man stood there, and he first asked me what I was called, and I knew he meant my name, and I told him my name. And he asked me, he said, "Why are you frightened?" He said, "Don't be frightened. We wish you no harm." He said, "We mean you no harm. We wish you only happiness." And I told him my name, and when I told him my name, he said he was called Cold. That was the name that he was called by. And he asked me what the city of Parkersburg, he pointed to the lights, he didn't point, but he gave the impression that he was pointing, and he asked me what that was called. And I told him it was Parkersburg, it was a city, a town, and he asked me if most all the people lived in this city or town. And I explained to him that it was a place of business. It's where we transacted our business. That the people lived in communities, outlying communities, most of the people. And when I told him that this was a city, he said that his, where his home was, that that was called a gathering. And again, he told me not to be frightened, which I was. I was very frightened. And as far as I can understand, this was all mental. There was no spoken words from him. I knew what he was asking me, but yet he stood there and his mouth did not move. He had a smile on his face. He appeared very courteous and friendly. And after I talked with him a while, he told me he would see me. He said, "We will see you again," and he left in his vehicle.
Now, Mr. Dernberger, for the sake of our television audience here, the words that you used, cold would be like cold is his name. This is how it sounded to you, that his name was cold.
Yes.
And the word gathering was like we would know together or something like this.
Yes, that's what he meant. That was the impression that he gave.
And he did not move his lips nor utter any sound whatsoever. He talked with you in telepathy then.
That was right, that his lips did not move. He uttered no words at all.
But you talked. I mean, he didn't.
Yes, I talked. He told me twice that I could either talk or I could think, which either would be better or easier for me.
This was an instant thing. This wasn't, there was no hesitation on his part nor on your part. You knew immediately what he was communicating to you, and he knew immediately what you were communicating to him.
That is right.
Now, according to David Weatherly in his book, Strange Intruders, this episode changed Dernberger's life. And by December 1967, he had divorced his wife, moved to another state, and married a younger woman. He had become a contactee, famous in UFO circles for having repeated encounters with the strange man called Indrid Cold. Dernberger claimed that Cold, along with others, visited him at his farm. They would often arrive in automobiles and have long talks with the former salesman. Unidentified lights and objects were seen by many witnesses in the skies over Dernberger's home. Now, Dernberger, also known as Woody, as he became fondly known, openly talked about his encounters, appearing on numerous radio and television shows and working with several UFO organizations. His initial report was picked up by the UPI and circulated around the world. He would later report that Indrid Cold claimed to be from a planet called Lanulos in the galaxy of Ganymedes, or Ganymedes. Woody also claimed to have visited Cold's planet, and there he said he saw exotic plants and animals. The people, he said, sometimes wore colorful clothing, but often remained completely nude. Who knows if that part of the story is true, or if only the story of Indrid Cold is true. But Indrid Cold is always described the same way: dark, beady eyes and a large, huge grin. Now, there are a few other stories of the grinning man that have been cited from different parts of the world, even one in Italy. But a friend of mine, Nick Redfern, who is an author, of course, he wrote about a story that was given to him by a woman simply known as Christine, who grew up in the Lone Star State. That's right, my home state, Texas. And the story goes like this. She said, "I haven't told a lot of people about it. When I first saw the person, I was about 1 or 2 years old. I have a very long memory. It was like the typical thing that you hear. It was this man who would stand in the doorway of my bedroom. I remember standing in my crib and holding onto the bars as he wore a fedora and a tan raincoat with black trousers. He had shiny shoes and black leather gloves. He just would stand there and would grin. There was nothing friendly about the way he was grinning. It was horrible, emotionless. It didn't blink, and he came off and on for a few years. Even as I got older and slept in my own bed, I would wake up sometimes, like at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that went on. That still happens. All of a sudden, I'll be wide awake at 3 o'clock in the morning, for no apparent reason. But as a kid, I'd wake up at 3 o'clock and he'd be there. I didn't have any frame of reference for it. Of course, my mom didn't believe me. She just thought I was dreaming. But there were all sorts of strange paranormal things that happened throughout my childhood, and I wonder if it all was part of the same thing. I even got weird phone calls as a teenager. The phone would just ring, and it sounded like a little kid speaking in another language, just rapidly talking into the phone. I thought at the time it was some little kid who got on the payphone and started dialing numbers from another country, perhaps, you know, just prank calling. But when I read The Mothman Prophecies by John Keel, I went, holy shit, this was the same thing. It kind of validated that this person was real, and it was then that I was 12. A friend and I were out riding our bikes at around 9:30 at night in the summer. I was in a small town in West Texas, and we stopped and were looking in the doors of the Baptist church as they had just put in new carpets. A big Saturday night, right? But we both turned at the same time to look behind us, and this man appeared, like right on the edge of the streetlight, and started walking towards us. And he was wearing the exact same outfit. The fedora, the tan overcoat, the black pants. But this time, his whole head and hands were bandaged. We didn't speak. We just took off like a shot, around the corner, to our house. We didn't know what to make of it, but I thought it was probably that same person that I used to see. When I got into my early 20s, I was living in Dallas, and I met a girl. We got to talking about paranormal stuff, and she lived in Lufkin, which is in East Texas. She said that she and her sister shared a room, and that sometimes she would wake up and there would be this man in her room. She said he wore a hat and a long coat, and he would just stand there, grinning at them. One night she woke up, and he was staring at her, but he was petting her sister's head while she slept. And then, a few years later, another friend of mine who had grown up in New York, she had seen a similar man that would stand in her room. I thought, okay, that's great. I am absolutely not nuts. I had lights that would turn off and on. My stuff got moved around all the time. I still have my things get moved around. I had a poster of Marilyn Monroe jump off my wall, and it was only like 6 o'clock. I think I was 16 at the time, and it just flew off the wall and into the middle of the floor. I grew up in a really religious family, Southern Baptist. So that was all something of the devil, although I don't believe that now. There was another visible entity that used to show up. It was black and sort of shapeless, but had these enormous eyes, kind of like the quintessential way we depict aliens. The great big eyes, but they were silvery, with no pupil. They had a reflective quality. Again, it would be around 3 o'clock in the morning, and I would feel my bed jolt, and I would look down and see those eyes, right over the edge of my bed, and the black shapelessness around it. I turned on the light once, because I got my courage up. I thought if I don't move, it's going to kill me, and if I do move, it's going to kill me. Again, I was 16 or 17. I screamed for my mom. I just told her that I had had a nightmare. But then I saw it again. One morning I was getting ready to go to school, and I turned toward the shower and I could see the eyes looking between the hooks on the shower curtain. The final time this thing ever appeared, I didn't see it. I had a friend sleeping over, a senior in high school. She had never been to my house, and I had never told her about any of this kind of stuff. She was very religious, didn't really believe in any of this, or would have said it was the devil. Well, we were up the next morning, and she was helping me make my bed, and I said, "It was a lot of fun. You should come back over." And she looked at me and said, "I'm sorry, but I'm never going to come back over here." I said, "What did I do?" She said, "You didn't do anything. How do you not remember?" I said, "Really don't know what you're talking about. You'll have to tell me." She said she woke up suddenly during the night and she thought that she couldn't see. Then, when her eyes adjusted, there was a face so close to hers that she couldn't see anything else. I asked her what it looked like, and she said the same thing, these big eyes, and just black. She said she screamed so loud she figured she woke the whole neighborhood. All I did, according to her, was lift up and sit up on my elbow and look at her and say, "Are you okay?" And she said she was and went back to sleep. My mom didn't hear it either, and surely enough, she never came back to my house. So, what is this grinning man? Is it an alien? Is it perhaps a demon? Or Is it something from a parallel universe trying to disguise itself as a friendly person, only somehow screws it up? Like, whatever it is, it knows or thinks if it puts on a smiley face, we won't be scared, when in actuality, the stone-like locked grin is even more disturbing. Why are so many people seeing the same thing? And I wonder how many others have seen him, but have never come forward. The grinning man truly is one of the world's biggest mysteries, and I, for one, hope I never see him. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. The Grinning Man is it's a very odd being to be seen by people. I know we've talked about him before on this show a few times, but there's a few sightings that I wanted to, you know, share with people from David Weatherly's book. And what I find interesting is that when David spoke to John Keel, before John Keel passed away, of course, it was mentioned to him that to his dying day, he would still receive stories from time to time of people seeing this grinning man. And what a bizarre set of circumstances. It reminds me of so many stories where, have you ever heard the stories where people have encounters, not with just men in black, because they're kind of similar to this. I think the men in black are kind of similar to the grinning man. And the only reason I say that is there are sightings that people have experienced where they feel like either an extraterrestrial or an ultra-terrestrial, something from a parallel universe, is trying to make some kind of connection with us humans, but they're just not real good at it. So what they send along is like this viceroy, this emissary, this thing to communicate with humans if they mess it up. So like I'm talking about like...
That makes sense.
The MIB guys, some of them, they act real weird. They don't seem like they know how to chew food right. They don't seem like they know how to dress quite right. I've even heard stories where people will see like a phantom car, and inside they'll have like an odd, like robotic looking thing. And the Flatwood Monster is described as like a robot thing, is the only way I can describe it. The Grinning Man seems the same way. Like it's a guy that looks like he's wearing a plaid shirt. He's got a crazy, evil grin on his face, like little staring, beady eyes, but yet it's communicating through mental telepathy. So it's like, it looks as though something is trying to copy what it thinks we should, what a human being should look like, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
I'm not very good at describing it today, but that's what it kind of seems like, is something is creating something that looks as close to a human or what it thinks a human should look like, but it messes it up. And to us, it's obvious, like, why is the dude talking to me with a huge grin on his face? Like, it thinks, well, I know, we'll put a grin on its face. That way it doesn't frighten anybody. Because from all the accounts, like, when the people are talking to the being through telepathy, it's always like, look, don't be scared. I'm not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. Just very strange things. I don't know. It's one of the, I don't even know what class do you put it in? It's not cryptozoology. I don't even know.
They always feel interdimensional to me.
Yeah.
As crazy as that sounds, because we don't know anything, of course, about any of it. And like we always talk about, that's kind of like your go-to. That's your throwaway. If you don't know what it is, oh, it's interdimensional.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, it's just the way
category
it is.
X. I mean, I really don't know where to put the grinning man into, but it's a very bizarre set of sightings.
Well, and I always pile them in there with like the old hag and hat man.
The rake.
Yes, exactly. All this is, there's some sort, you know what it comes down is to just some sort of evil presence. And that's just like you said, it just appears to you in this way.
Yeah.
Because it goes also, like we talk about Slender Man.
Yeah.
We know that there was some old stories about it, new stories about it and all this stuff. But it's almost like we have, as a culture, consciously fueled the fire to, it almost makes you feel like you fuel the fire to this idea. It almost makes you feel like you're living in a simulation.
Yeah.
And that the simulation will change to almost accompany or adapt to what is going on.
Right. It makes you wonder, are there like these demons or djinn that are just sitting there in the ether and they're looking for some kind of form to manifest, and the collective thought of an idea like the Slender Man, the demon or whatever it is like, oh, that's it. I'll take that form. Reminds me of Ghostbusters. Remember when the guy's like, don't think of it or it'll manifest itself that way. And it came back as the Stay Puft Marshmallow
that's
guy.
Right. Yeah.
But it kind of seems like that, right?
It does. It does seem
so.
Like
Slender Man, we know, is not a real thing. It was created by a guy for like a creepypasta contest, but then it became so aware. Everybody became aware of it, and even the little girls who actually committed murder based on it. And it makes you wonder: is there some demon that's looking to prey on a victim? It knows that you know about the Slender Man, and you're terrified by it. So I'm going to manifest myself as the Slender Man. Like for me, I'm going to manifest myself as an IRS agent. And I'm going to pretend to do an audit on Kyle. You know what I'm saying? Like, it peers, whatever they in this parallel dimension, their ultra powers, whatever they have, they're able to peer into your soul, into your mind, and they know what terrifies you, and that's what they're going to come as. I don't know.
It is odd. It is very, very odd.
You know, when we talk about seeing beings from another parallel universe, one of the common ones that's brought up is Sasquatch itself.
Yes.
There was actually a recent sighting, or at least a story that was posted over there to Lon, and about a guy that calls himself Dan M. And he's, check this out, Cam. He says, the first experience I had happened at a campground in northern Georgia. I was awakened at around 4 a.m. by a pack of howling coyotes. About 3 seconds after the coyotes started howling, all of a sudden this roaring Yahoo type of scream that sounded like it was coming from all sides completely drowned out the sound of the coyotes. It was so loud and powerful that I could feel the vibrations coming up through the ground through my sleeping bag. Clearly, nothing I've ever heard before. I've heard other people describe a loud roaring Yahoo sound with these creatures, coupled with the fact that I have studied this mystery for so long, I knew that right away it had to be a Bigfoot. This Yahoo roar was so loud that the creature couldn't have been more than 100 yards from me. Which is a little strange in itself, because one side of this campground, there is a pretty busy road. But nonetheless, this area in general of this campground is surrounded mostly by forest. Now, the second experience happened 30 days later, once again not far from where the first experience had occurred. This time, I was staying at a second campground that was much more secluded and much deeper into the forest. It was around 6 p.m. I and other campers were standing around talking about some of the hiking we had done earlier that day. Other people were out and about getting their campfire started. Also, there was a campground host who was walking around introducing himself with a clipboard and making sure people had paid and also joined in the conversations. It was at this time that all of a sudden, roughly 50 yards uphill on a ridge overlooking the campground, a tree came crashing down. Moments after the tree had hit the ground, I and all the others that were standing around, talking, heard what can only be described as a loud, guttural grunt, the kind of grunt you would hear out of a silverback gorilla. All of us were startled and were asking each other what the heck crashed that tree and then made that deep, guttural grunting sound. One of the other campers even mentioned that it was probably a Bigfoot. The other campers laughed, but I didn't think it was too funny, because if one of those creatures was nearby, we possibly could be looking at a very dangerous situation. Thankfully, nothing happened after that, but here is why the story gets even weirder. I mean, it gets really weird. At the back of this campground is a dirt road. Now, this road can be used for hiking or travel during hunting season. One of my favorite things to do when I'm backpacking or camping is to wake up early to get a fire going and have me a nice hot cup of coffee. Well, I got up that morning around 6 a.m., got my fire going, and fresh coffee made. As I'm sipping on my coffee, out on the dirt road at the back of the campground comes this white SUV, completely blacked out, with a big, huge sticker of a patty silhouette stuck to the back window. Now, me being a believer in the existence of these creatures, I have a few similar stickers on the back of my window. So I took what I was seeing as a friendly visit from a fellow Bigfoot enthusiast. I took it upon myself to casually walk up and say hello and to see if there was anything we could talk about regarding any creature activity in the area. As I approached, the driver of the SUV slowly rolled down his window about halfway, and I immediately noticed something odd. First, there were two guys in the SUV, and they were both dressed in full tactical gear. They had two AR-15s on a gun rack at the back of the interior, with both gentlemen having military-style boots, pistols at the ankles, black beanies, and sunglasses. I mean, these guys were completely decked out like law enforcement would be, but there was no badge, just complete tactical dress from head to toe. I then playfully asked, "Are you guys out here looking for Bigfoot?" The driver of the SUV then said to me, "Why do you ask?" I replied, "Well, I see the Bigfoot sticker in the back of your vehicle. I have a couple of those in the back window of my car also." The reply I received was very strange. The driver just looked at me without saying anything. And then the passenger guy, in a very stuttering kind of manner, said, "It's just a practical joke sticker from my girlfriend." After that response, the driver then stepped on the gas and out of the campground they went. I just find it odd that there is a perfectly healthy tree pushed over, followed by a gorilla-like grunt, and then these two tactical dressed, possibly military guys show up the next morning out of nowhere, driving a blacked-out SUV with an oversized Sasquatch sticker on the back window. Very, very odd in my opinion. And that's it. Dan M. So what do you think of that story?
It's definitely very odd. That dude's not being truthful.
You don't think so?
I don't believe that guy was just popping in there. Oh, yeah, it's just a practical joke sticker. Because here's the reason I say that. I have never met anyone in the Bigfoot community that once they knew you were kind of into it, wasn't willing to sit and talk to you and discuss it and ask things about it and really get into it more than anything.
Yeah, everyone I've ever met at any conference I've ever been to.
Overly friendly.
Yeah.
Overly friendly. So, yeah, I don't believe a word of what that... I there's no way that dude just... Oh, it's just a joke. It's just a joke. Really, it's just a joke. No, it's not.
But you hear these stories from time to time of these special groups of the military that are their job, Cam, is to actually go out and hunt and kill Sasquatch.
That is true.
You've heard those stories, right?
That is true, yes.
A secret club. I don't know group. What do you want to call that?
it is a Sasquatch killing club.
Yeah,
that's
right.
It. Yeah,
it's like SEAL Team 12 or something. Yeah. Top secret. I don't know. But Christmas is upon us. Cam, did you get all your Christmas shopping done?
I have a few more things I'm going to pick up from my mother, and I'm done. And I can get those just right here close to town. What I'm getting.
Yeah, I've got one more item to get, and then I'm completely done myself.
So, and I'm happy with that whole thing. I ruined it for my wife. Like I told you earlier, she's mad. So she's mad because I figured out what one of my gifts were.
Hey, go ahead and lay out the story for us.
We got a gift for my son. And No, that's as far as I'm going because
he might listen.
He might actually listen. That's it. I'm not going any further. He may actually
better to keep
listen.
It secret, right?
Well, it's one of those things. I could say anything I wanted to about my wife on this show because she never listens. But my son, every now and again, he'll pop in and listen, and that would be my luck. So no, not doing it.
We'll
but
just we keep
got,
it top
the good thing
the
is
episode.
I got everything done for my daughter, and she's the difficult one. I mean, you know, she's a 17-year-old girl. Yeah. So, I mean, she's all over the place with the stuff she wants, but we got all that handled. So everything's going good so far. I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it to get here. The weather's getting cooler. I'm ready for all that stuff to happen.
Yeah, you know, I'm in a similar situation. The boys, the older boys, they are at the age where it's real. They're not teenagers yet, but they're not little boys either. Mm-hmm. So it's real tough to figure out what they want. And, you know, they're spoiled, so they pretty much have everything anyways. Now, Luke, I mean, he doesn't matter. You can get him anything. You can get him any kind of Ultra Monster, any kind of Transformer. You could get him a stick.
He wants a Zuni doll.
No, he don't.
No, he doesn't.
He is. Did we talk about that in the last Elite show?
I think so.
I think it was on the Elite show.
I think
show.
It was, yeah.
To fill everybody in, if you're not an elitist, there's an ancient movie. It was a made-for-TV movie back in the 70s. I think it was like 1975 or 74, called The Trilogy of Terror. Now, you can go on YouTube and you can watch it for free. When The Trilogy of Terror, it breaks down into three separate stories. You know, hence the trilogy. Well, the final story is a girl that goes to Africa or somewhere and buys this what's called a Zuni doll, Z-U-N-I, and it's a little tiny doll, and it's got a necklace on, and it has a warning. If the necklace comes off, the thing will come alive. Well, you know, the necklace comes off, the thing, you know, runs around the house, it attacks her, and she turns into a creature, whatever. I made Luke watch it, and he's been terrified. Well, my wife found that you can actually buy these Zuni dolls off Amazon. Now, mind you, they're like $200, so I'm never going to buy one, but that's been the new thing around the house is if Luke's not being a good boy or not picking up his stuff, we say, hey,
we're getting a Zuni.
We're going to get you a Zuni doll. So, you know, we don't need an elf on the shelf. We need a Zuni doll. So you might want to go check that out. Camden, are you going out of town? Do you have any driving to do this holiday?
No, actually, I do not. I don't have anywhere to go. Everybody's coming to my house. So,
wow, aren't you lucky?
Dude, I am. It is, look, this of course, except for this week at work. This week at work has been an absolute beating, and it's going to continue to be. It always gets like this because
everybody's
going
to take off. So.
Everybody's in and out. I've got so much stuff to try to get done and work around the weather because a lot of my stuff is based on, you know, the weather outside, so I have to watch that. I've been doing a ton of paperwork. I had to do goals and accomplishments this week, sat down and type all that stuff up of what my accomplishments were for this past year and what my goals were, and they always give me a hard time because I only put down one goal, and that's just to keep my job is all I put down on there. And they laugh about it all the time because I don't think they would do me the favor and fire me. That's all. I'm like, just fire me. Come on, man. I want some time off. But they ain't doing that. So.
Yeah. I don't have to drive too far, but I do have to, the problem is when you go to the destinations, even though they're not that far, it's just packing up the kids. And then everywhere you go, you come back with a haul of toys.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the house looks like a bomb blew up in the living room. There'll be, you know, boxes for days. Then we have 40 bags of garbage in the front yard. And then, of course, I have a lucky route. The route that my house is located on is the exact route that seems to always coincide with holidays. And so they always skip me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to happen again. You know, it's like, I don't even know how to describe how unlucky that is. But, yeah. So we don't have any family coming and staying with us this year. So that's nice. And Christmas Eve celebration is my mother's, which is because we usually have a Christmas Eve celebration, and it's rotated between a couple different families' houses, and my mother's is the closest house to mine, so that's really fortunate for me. If you're going to be out traveling about this Christmas holiday season, please be careful out there. And don't forget Elite. We have an Elite show. We do an extra show every week, and Christmas is coming up. That'd be a really good gift you could give somebody. It's $5 a month. You'll get an additional show every week, and you have access to the entire back catalog. You got to go to the website, though, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow us on all forms of social media. You can call us 817-945-3828. And don't forget about our sponsor, Dollar Shave Club. You need to put in the URL, dollarshaveclub.com/expanded, and you'll get that starter pack. Cam, are you going to be a good boy this year? Have you been a good boy this
year?
Well,
no.
You're not going to? Are you going to get coal?
I would imagine so. I would imagine so. It's one of those things, like we said, man, I'd rather just buy my own gifts. I like buying stuff for other people, and other than that, I'm like, y'all don't have to get me anything, but they always end up doing it. It's like I told my daughter, she was like, I'm going to get you something, Dad, I'm going to get you something, you know, and I'm like, don't spend your money on me. I go, if you really want to get me something, just write me a poem, or even at her age, I go, just write me a card. Give me something where you in writing tells you, or tells me how you feel. That's worth more than anything that you can give me. I don't need
any kind of I've got enough stuff. I'm not real materialistic anyway. You know, like when we buy gear, we like to have good gear. I like to buy it one time. That's it. I'm just like a, I don't want to mess with it again. So I don't need a lot of that other stuff in there like that.
Yeah,
so.
It's about the people. Because, I mean, years from now, you won't remember what so-and-so bought you for Christmas. But you will remember, you know, like having Christmas with them.
Yes.
You know, underneath the Christmas lights and the tree and the fire and a couple drinks. And, and when they're gone, it makes Christmas a little duller every year. Mm-hmm. It's just like, man, I remember that. You know, like, I miss my grandparents when it comes to Christmas time. Even as a 41-year-old, I'm like, I still remember Christmas at my grandparents' house. And that's something, you know, I wish I could experience again.
That's where we are at my wife's side of the family is we used to go to her grandmother's in Oklahoma, her grandparents' house, and they would be 51 of us get together all at one, every year. 51 people in that house. It was a big spot, and then they added on and added on. And I mean, it was the most fun because it was madness. It was complete madness. And of course, when it's all gone, it kind of falls apart. We do our best. You know, we still stay in touch. We still get together often and on. But it's not the same. You know, it's one of those deals. So that's the reason you're right. So, folks, I guess what we're saying is make sure you enjoy spending time with your loved ones. A friend of mine that I've known ever since I was in diapers, his mother passed away last night. And it's going to be real hard on them. It's a real strange thing that happened. And I can't imagine what it would be like right here before Christmas. So it's one of those things. You never really know what's going to happen. And the whole deal. So I said, man, just enjoy your time. Even with that brother-in-law you dislike or you really hate your mother-in-law and all that stuff, just try to find a bright spot in putting up with them or anything. It's just one of those deals. It's just the time to spend a little time with one another. And with that, we'll let y'all go. We'll let y'all get back to your rat killing, doing whatever it is that y'all do.
Your wrapping of gifts.
That's right.
Ryan, have a Merry Christmas, everybody. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.